Cats tuned to yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden years. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Westerns coming up in this hour. You'll enjoy James Stewart as the Six Shooter later on, but right now it's John Daner as Paladin and Have Gun Will Travel. The CBS broadcast from July 3rd, 1960, called Dad Blamed Luck.
If I had used good judgment, I wouldn't have taken this job in the first place. But now that I've come this far, I'm willing to go on just to see what else will happen. Have Gun, Will Travel. Starring Mr. John Daner as Paladin. San Francisco, 1875. The Carlton Hotel, headquarters of a man called Paladin.
Mr. Paladin!
Oh, here you are.
No, 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 hey boy, you're interrupting a very important game.
Oh, you play cards all by yourself?
I play solitaire. All by myself.
Oh, solitaire. His game of luck?
His game of luck that becomes game of skill. In the proper hands, hey boy.
Wait a minute. I bet you can't beat it.
Who, may I ask, are you?
Gentlemen,
please. One at a time. Now, if you're determined to interrupt my game, let's do it with as little fuss as possible. Now, hey, boy.
Lisa, this gentleman come to desk, Mr. Paladin. Ask if I know who you are. I bring him here to you.
I see. And you, sir?
My name is Howard, Mr. Paladin. Jamie Howard. Howard, say, why don't you... You ought to play that black seven on that red eight you got there.
Well, this particular game has been temporarily suspended, Mr. Howard. At least until I find out just what your business might be.
My business? Right, yeah. Oh, yes. Well, you mean, why do I want to see you?
That's what I mean.
Well, sir, it is about my gold mine. I lost it. Yeah, I heard about you, and I figured maybe you're the man to help me get it back.
You lost a gold mine?
Well, not exactly. I know where it is, all right. I say, I know where it is, but when I begin to hit pay dirt, a feller swindled me out of it and had me run off of my claim.
I see. And just where is this gold mine?
Up back of Columbia, near a place called Yankee Hill.
Columbia? Why, those mines were worked out years ago.
Oh, give you 5-1 they were. Not all of them. No, sirree. Here, take a look at this.
That's gold, all right.
Bet your life it is. That's why they stole her. I snuck back and took these out of the mine after. Figured maybe you wouldn't believe me. Oh, I can pay you all right. I can pay you plenty once I get my mine back.
I see. Mr. Howard, I think you have just made a deal.
Well, good. I'm thankful that you're willing to help.
Well, hey, boy, what do you think?
Well, Mr. Paladin, why don't you play a black seven on red eight like Mr. Howard say?
Got an early start the next morning. Early, but not altogether bright. At least not for grizzled old Mr. Howard. He looked like he'd spent the night taking in the sights of San Francisco. I had seen his type before. Prospectors in from the hills looking strangely out of place among the gas lights and horse cars of a modern city. We had a long ride ahead of us, and I saw to it we covered as much ground as possible. Howard didn't have much to say until about noon, when we pulled up alongside a little stream to let our horses drink.
Oh, my doggish. I'm right glad to rest a spell, Paladin.
Yeah, the horses are, too, Mr. Howard. If we're going to reach Columbia, we can't run them into the ground.
You know, hey, you hear that?
Oh, hear what?
Hey, that bird. I'll give you 3-1. That's a Papa Robin bringing some food home for the young'uns.
You will, huh?
Yeah. You want to bet?
No. You better save your gold, Mr. Howard. You might need it.
Yeah. I meant to talk to you about that.
About what, Mr. Howard?
Well, about that gold. I don't have it anymore.
You don't have it?
Well, Mr. Howard, there must have been close to $700 worth of gold in that pouch you showed me last night. How could you have gone through that in one evening?
Well, sure, now, I'll tell you. I met this feller, and we got to talking about poker. You know, he decided to play a little, and the first thing I knew, he had it, and I didn't.
Mr. Howard, I ought to turn around right now.
Don't you worry none. Don't worry. There's plenty more where that come from. As soon as you get my mind back from me, we'll be rich, both of us.
But just how much ore do you think there is in your mind?
Well, it's hard to say, but should take out $600,000-$700,000 worth easy. I bet you.
Mr. Howard, you're quite a betting man, aren't you?
Well, sure. Does a fella good to do a little gambling now and then. Makes life interesting. Say, makes it interesting. That's how I found all them other ones, taking a gamble where others wouldn't.
That's how you found all the other what?
Why, all the other mines. Why, son, I've been through four or five fortunes before this one. Well, I'm getting older now, and that's why I'm hanging on to this one.
Yeah. Well, we better move on. Come on, boy.
Come on, Pete.
Mr. Howard, how long has it been since the country around Columbia saw its last big boom?
Oh, about 10, 12 years, I guess. Of course, there's still a few of us around. Figured that there was still a strike to be made, and I proved it.
Well, then tell me, isn't there still a sheriff in Columbia?
Oh, why, sure there is. Farrell's his name.
What did he say when you told him about being forced off your claim?
When I told him?
Yeah.
Sure, I didn't have to tell him. He already knew.
He did?
Why, sure. He was the one that run me off.
He was the... Oh.
Yep.
Oh. Mr. Howard, did you say the sheriff ran you off your claim?
Well, now, wait a minute now, Paladin. I say, wait just a minute. I guess I should have told you. Sheriff Farrell, he is in cahoots with the other one.
What other one?
Why, the other Farrell, the one that runs the miner's friend's saloon up there. You couple of dirty, black-hearted scoundrels.
And they're related?
Well, sure. Sheriff's a brother to the other.
Well, all right, Mr. Howard. I don't know why, but I'm willing to go through with this just to see what happens.
Oh, thanks, Paladin. It's just one other thing.
Oh, something more you haven't told me, hmm?
Well, it's just that I've been thinking about this Mr. Howard business. Would you mind just calling me Jamie? Everybody else does.
Okay. Jamie, it's a deal.
I don't know, Paladin. Might be we shouldn't have rode right into town like this. Right down the main street and all.
You just let me worry about that, Jamie.
Yeah, but suppose somebody see this.
Jamie, I want them to see us.
All right, you two.
Yeah, what'd I tell you? What'd I tell you? That's the sheriff.
Oh?
Yeah, just get them hands up and turn around slow and easy. Drop your gun belt right where you be.
Now, just a minute. Is this the way you welcome a visitor to town?
Visitor? I don't consider no partner Jamie's a visitor. You better do as I say.
All right.
That's good. Now, Jamie, I told you once, get them hands up.
Sheriff, why are you doing this? From what I hear, you've already run him off his claim. Isn't that enough?
That was then. Now I'm arresting a pair of horse thieves.
Horse thieves?
That there was another little thing I guess I should have told you, Paladin. This here horse, it belongs to the sheriff.
But, Jamie, why would you steal the sheriff's horse?
Why? Well, everybody knows it's the best one in town. If I'd have taken any other horse, they'd have caught me before I got 5 miles away.
That's enough talk. You just start walking. I'm taking you to jail. Both of you.
I'm sorry about all this, Mr. Paladin.
You should be, Jamie.
Yeah, but I'm not worried none. No, sirree.
You're not?
No. I figure you for a man that can get us out of here pronto.
Well, thanks for the vote of confidence.
Well, anything I can do to help, just let me know.
No, I think you've done just about enough, Jamie.
Well, it isn't like I really stole the sheriff's horse, you know. I brung her back, didn't I? He's got her tied up in the stable out and back right now, ain't he?
Yeah, you may have a point there, Jamie. Sheriff?
Hey, Sheriff! Come in! Sheriff!
All right, stop that noise. Have you know I run a peaceable jail.
Sheriff, I think maybe we can make a deal.
The only deal you'll be making's with a rope. After a fair trial, of course. Horse thievery's a hanging offense.
Now, listen to me for a minute. In a way, you're responsible for all this. Did you or did you not run Jamie off his claim?
Oh, sure I did. It was my legal duty. That's what I'm paid to do as sheriff. But that didn't give him no right to take up horse stealing.
No, wait a minute. You have your horse back, don't you?
Sure, after I caught the thief.
But you didn't catch him. Jamie brought the horse back of his own accord.
Well,
that meant that you were without the use of your horse for 5-6 days, right?
5 days.
Now, $10 a day seems like a fair rental. Supposing you had rented your horse to Jamie.
But I didn't. He stole her from right in front of the jail.
I said supposing. Now, 5 days at $10 a day is $50. Now, if Jamie paid you that and threw in an extra 10, wouldn't you be, well, willing to call it square?
Oh, well, now, that might put a different picture on it. It'd cost $10 to ask someone to build a gallows, anyhow.
Jamie.
Eh?
Pay the sheriff his $60.
Pay? Oh, well, Paladin, I ain't got $60. Like I told you, I lost my gold in San Francisco, but once I get my mind back...
Of course, I guess I could use you prisoners to build the gallows yourself.
Hold it, Sheriff.
Huh?
I've got $60. It's in my saddlebag.
This is a mighty nice room. Oh, I didn't know this hotel was so nice.
All right now, Jamie. Before we go any further, I want you to know something. I've got $60 invested in you. If it weren't for that, I'd turn around and walk out that door right now.
Oh, don't you worry about that, Paladin. You'll get your money back. Yeah, and plenty more, once I get my mind back.
Listen, Jamie, just what is the true story? The sheriff said it wasn't yours.
Oh, it's them Farrells. I say, it's them Farrells. They're all alike. The sheriff and the other one that runs the saloon with them crooked games.
What crooked games?
Why, them card games with the crooked dealing. Oh, I've seen that dealer slipping cards off the bottom of the deck. I know. And then when they found out from the man at the essay office just how rich my strike really was...
That's how you lost your mind? In a crooked card game?
That is how I had it stolen. They made me sign it over to them. And then the sheriff come around and run me off. That's why I come for you, to get it back for me.
But, Jamie, if you knew the card game was crooked, why did you get in it?
Why didn't I get in? Well, now, that is a silly question. Because there ain't no other place around here to gamble. That's why.
Somehow I had to get away from Jamie Howard. I went downstairs and started to walk up Main Street, and then I noticed across the street the Miner's Friend Saloon, F. Farrell, proprietor. I decided to talk to Mr. Farrell about those card games of his.
Well, hello there. I haven't seen you around here before.
No, I'm afraid you haven't.
Well, let's make up for lost time. How about a drink?
Later, maybe. I'm here on business.
Oh, well, maybe I can help you.
You can. If you just tell me where I can find Mr. Farrell.
Mr. Farrell?
Well, the man who runs this place. The man whose name is on the sign out front. And just what is so funny?
There isn't any Mr. Farrell here. I'm the owner of this place, and my name's Floss Farrell.
Oh.
Now, you wanted to talk business?
Yes, I did. My name is Paladin, Miss Farrell.
So...
I'm here to represent Jamie Howard.
Well, Jamie, I haven't seen him around for a while. He's been living kind of high since he struck it rich, hasn't he?
But that's all over now, isn't it?
Just what do you mean?
I mean, he's no longer living so high since you took his mind from him in your card game here.
Oh, not me, mister. I don't run any game. I leased the gambling concession to Bill Hogarty.
Oh? Where would I find him?
Back at the poker table. He's a fella dealing, the big fella.
I took a seat in the poker game Bill Hargity was dealing and watched him work. He didn't look like the typical card sharp. He was big enough to scare most men by his size alone. And the livid scar along his left cheek didn't do anything to gentle his appearance. But he didn't need all that. He had a gambler's hands. And the cards came out of the deck for him like they were trained. Off the top and off the bottom, too.
Well, too bad, boys. Seems as though luck just isn't running your way tonight. Deal you in again, Mr. Paladin?
Yes, Mr. Hargitay, if you don't mind. I have a hunch my luck may change this hand.
Well, that's the way to think, all right?
Oh? Yes, sir.
There you are.
All right. I think I'll just open for 50.
50, huh? Well, I'll match that and raise you 100.
Ooh, I'm out. That's too rich for me.
Me too.
How about it, Paladin? You still in?
Still in, Mr. Hargitay.
Cards?
No, no. I think I'll have just as much luck with these as any of you might slip me off the bottom of the deck.
What are you saying, mister?
I was just wondering if that was how you managed to win Jamie Howard's mind from him.
You accusing me of cheating?
You've been dealing cards off the bottom ever since I sat down at this table.
I'm not wearing a gun, Paladin. And if you are...
Well, I'll be happy to leave mine right here on the table, Mr. Hargitay. Now?
No!
God, you got him, Paladin. Here, you got him good.
Jamie, where'd you come from?
Didn't think I was going to miss the fun, did you?
You were right about the game. It was crooked. Let me have that beer, will you?
Yes.
All right, Hargitay, you want any more?
No. No, I had enough.
Where's the deed to Jamie's mine?
My pocket.
There you are, Jamie. While Hargitay had the deed, he was within his legal rights to have Sheriff Farrell run you off the claim. I'll see that he signs it back over to you.
I'll take that paper, if you don't mind, Mr. Paladin.
You what?
Might as well give it to her.
What's this all about?
Well, I say, Paladin, I'll tell you now.
You'll tell me what?
What he's trying to say, Mr. Paladin. I offered him 10,000 cash against his mine that you'd win the fight.
And you bet against me?
Well, Paladin, that was an awful good bet. And look at the size of him laying there.
Jamie.
Huh? Well, now, don't you worry none about your money.
Jamie.
You'll get it. You'll get it just as soon as I find me another mine.
Jamie. Oh, I give up. Who is it?
Oh, is it Mr. Wong, Mr. Paladin? Bring coffee.
Ooh, whoa. Well, that's a pleasant thought.
Strong, hot coffee good to wake you up in morning, yes?
Miss Wong. This coffee is strong and hot enough to wake up old Rip Van Winkle.
Friend of yours, Mr. Wrinkle, Mr. Paladin?
Just an acquaintance, Miss Wong.
Oh, hey, boy, say, you get back late last night.
Very late.
Oh, Hope Trip, very fortunate, and Lady Luck right by your side.
Miss Wong, the luck that rode by my side was far from being a lady.
Pepsi-Cola refreshes without filling. Why? Because it's truly light.
Charlie, you're forgetting something.
Wait, Kay, there's more. Yes, ice-cold Pepsi is the delicious refreshment that goes great at a picnic or a party.
But, Charlie...
And Pepsi goes fast. People like it, so keep plenty handy. There.
Oh, you did fine. Except for one thing.
Well, I mentioned lightness and how Pepsi refreshes and how fast it goes.
You left out Pepsi sociability. You know the Be Sociable song.
But, Kay, I can't sing.
I can. Listen.
Be sociable. Look smart. Keep up to date with Pepsi. Drink light, refreshing Pepsi. Stay young and fair and debonair. Be sociable. Have a Pepsi.
Well, at least I can say this. Pick up an extra carton of Pepsi today.
Please do.
Have Gun, Will Travel. Created by Herb Meadow and Sam Rolfe, is produced and directed in Hollywood by Frank Paris and stars John Daner as Paladin, with Ben Wright as Hayboy and Virginia Gregg as Miss Wong. Tonight's story was specially written for Have Gun, Will Travel by Gene Webster. Featured in the cast were Forrest Lewis, Barney Phillips, Virginia Christine, and Jack Moyles. This is Hugh Douglas inviting you to join us again next week when CBS Radio presents Have Gun, Will Travel.
Have Gun, Will Travel, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 3rd of July, 1960 on CBS. You're listening to an hour of radio westerns on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levionier. Coming up next, Jimmy Stewart is Britt Ponsett, the Six Shooter, in an NBC broadcast from the 27th of December, 1953. Like most radio westerns and movies, for that matter, one of the signature sounds is the score, which is provided by Basil Adlam, who had a distinguished career on radio, penning scores for some prestige series on the air. One of his first was a tribute to Ethel Barrymore, broadcast on ABC in that network's infancy, and he went on to compose for programs like Mr. President with Edward Arnold, Jack Webb's Pat Novak for Hire, Dangerous Assignment, and the Hollywood Star Playhouse, wrapping up his radio career with The Six Shooter. This next broadcast, called Ned Plummer's Widow.
In a moment, you'll hear James Stewart as The Six Shooter, just one of the many fine programs brought to you Sundays on NBC. Later this evening, listen to the NBC Star Playhouse with one of your favorite stars. Hear Stroke of Fate. What happened if fate had reversed historical facts? And be sure to keep tuned for the dramatic story of Last Man Out. It's a wonderful lineup of great programs, all of them heard only on NBC. James Stewart as The Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both The Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as The Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
The rain sure was coming down that afternoon in Petersville. But it started all of a sudden, too, just after I left Scar at the livery stable and headed up the main street toward Doc Early's office. All right, real cloudburst. The wind was from the north and strong enough so that the water was beating against the building slant-wise. And the way the wheel ruts in the street were turning into puddles. Oop. The rain barrels were sloshing over the sides. Well, it was like the whole town had been pushed under a leaky sieve. The closest cover I could spot was the front porch of the Jackson Hotel. So I... that's better. You know, for a minute I sort of shook myself off like a half-drowned pup. Then I noticed the young fellow standing beside me. I didn't recognize him, though, not at first.
Mr. Ponsett?
Hmm?
You are Britt Ponsett, ain't you?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I wasn't sure till I saw your gun. I guess you don't remember me, Mr. Ponsett. Calvin Plummer.
Calvin Ponsett? Oh. Oh, I sure remember you, Cal. Say, you really sprung up, haven't you? Why, by George, you're taller than I am. How'd you manage to do so much growing so fast?
Oh, I wasn't so fast, Mr. Ponsett. It's been 6 years since you were in Petersville.
6 years? Is that long?
Right after my 15th birthday, that's when you left.
6 years since I was here, huh? Let's see, that must make you right about 21 years old, huh?
Yes, sir.
Ah, 21. Well, that's a man's age.
It's supposed to be. Too bad everybody doesn't realize it.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes it takes a while for people to get used to the fact that you've grown up.
I guess so.
How are your folks?
Hmm?
Your Ma and Pa, how are they?
Didn't you know, Mr. Ponsett? Pa died last summer.
Oh, no, I hadn't heard that. I'm sorry, Cal. I'm awful sorry about that. He was a fine man.
Yeah. At least I thought so.
Well, everybody thought so. You know that.
Did they?
Well, what do you mean, Cal?
Nothing. Looks like it's letting up. You staying in town, Mr. Ponsett?
No, just overnight. I kind of twisted my hand while I was branding a calf the other day. Swelling wouldn't go down, so I thought maybe Doc Early ought to have a look at it. If he's still practicing here, is he?
Yeah, he's still here. I expect you've been moving around quite a bit, huh, Mr. Ponce?
Oh, more than my share, I guess.
You ain't never been to a place called Elk Point, have you? Somewhere out in the New Mexico Territory?
Oh, yes. I was out there in Elk Point 2 winters ago, I think it was.
What kind of setup is a Quincy ranch? Would you mind telling me?
Quincy?
Yeah, it's supposed to be one of the biggest outfits in those parts.
Right. You sure it's near Elk Point?
Well, ain't it?
Well, I don't know. Don't know. I never heard of a Quincy ranch around there.
You certain, Mr. Ponce?
Yeah. Of course, that doesn't mean that there isn't a...
Yeah, I know. Well, goodbye.
Say hello to your Ma for me, Cal. She's all right, I trust.
Sure. She's fine.
I reckon your father was... Well, it must have hit her pretty hard, huh?
She had a real fast recovery.
What?
10 months ain't very long to mourn, is it? Not even a year. Just 10 months. Bye, Mr. Ponce.
Well, Cal Plummer had done a lot more than just grow up since the last time I saw him. Strange way he was carrying on. I sure couldn't figure out what caused it. And I talk about his mother, like... Cora and Ned Plummer were just about as well suited as any two people I ever met up with. Well, you couldn't even think about one without thinking of the other. They must have been married on close to 35 years. Cal, he was their third child. He was the only one that lived. Gee, Ned sure thought the world of him. Petersville wouldn't be the same without Ned. Rain had stopped now. It even started to warm up a little. And the mud puddles out in the street were giving off little whiffs of steam. So I went over to Doc Early's office. It was just around the corner from the hotel.
Britt, don't look like you've broke a thing. But it's a real bad sprain. It's one you was even able to ride into town today.
Yeah, well, it wasn't any too comfortable, I'll tell you that much.
What you been doing for it?
Well, it wasn't much good to, Doc, out at the ranch, you know.
Yeah, well, some hot water and some salts might be a little help. I'll put the kettle on and get it warming. It was so darn chilly during all that rain, I built me a little fire in the stove. Good thing that ain't your shooting hand, Britt.
Well, I haven't needed a shooting hand much lately.
Yeah, you never know. You never know.
No, things look quiet enough around Petersville.
Yeah, they're quiet all right, considering that Sheriff Jay is out of town.
Oh?
Yeah, he had some business, took him over to the New Mexico Territory. He's checking up on some fella there.
Oh. Well, that's kind of a coincidence.
What do you mean?
Well, I just ran into Cal Plummer on the way up to see you, and he was asking me about New Mexico.
That wasn't no coincidence, Britt.
What?
You see, the reason the sheriff went to Roswell... Well, of course, officially, he's picking up a prisoner. But the reason he went himself instead of sending somebody else...
is so's he can do a little inquiring about Cal's new pa.
New pa?
Well, sure. Cora's married again. Didn't Cal tell you?
No, he didn't.
Well, I guess maybe he was just too ashamed to mention it.
Why, that doesn't seem possible. Cora Plummer remarried.
Oh, we was all mighty surprised. Nobody ever figured she'd look at another man, much less take a new husband. Especially so soon after. Well, it was less than a year. Oliver Quincy, that's the fellow's name.
Quincy, huh? Well, when did it happen, Doc?
Let's see, about a month ago. Maybe 5 weeks. 5 weeks and 3 days. And it's as plain as day he married her because she's got a little money. Ned left her a pretty well-fixed ranch and all them cattle.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about Cal?
Oh, he came in some money, too. Enough for a good start in life. And Cal's a hard worker. He'll get along. I feel kind of sorry for him, though. You know, he just worshipped his pa. And Cora getting hitched again, well, it was sort of like a slap in the face to him.
Yeah?
Sounds like that water's boiling. Yeah, that ought to be hot enough for you.
So what kind of a man is this Oliver Quincy? Is that his name,
yeah,
Oliver?
Yeah, that's his name, all right. Oh, you know the type, Brit. Big fella, white hair, mustache, always smiling. Now, where'd I put the nips and salt? Oh, here we are. A real four-flusher, that's what he is. You can spot him a mile off. Dresses like a dude, use a lot of fancy words. Move that stuff. Now, just let me... There. Now, just stick your hand in here.
Right here.
All the way, Britt. All the way. Heat's good for spring.
Holy smokes. That's hotter than a furnace, Doc.
Well, that's what draws out poison. You'll get used to it in a minute or so.
It draws out the what?
He claims that big ranch somewhere near Elk Point. Cora says he's worth more than she is. Well, maybe he's got her convinced, but he ain't fooling nobody else.
That's hot. It could be the truth.
If he's so well off, why are they living on Cora's property? Just answer me that, then.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Guess that water's cooling off. Maybe I ought to pour in some fresh.
No, that water's fine, Doc. That's just fine. It doesn't need to be a bit hotter. And the hand's feeling better already.
Yeah, well, you leave it in a little while longer anyhow.
Well, it's feeling better.
I reckon even Cora will get her eyes opened up when Sheriff Jay comes back from New Mexico. He'll have the truth about Oliver Quincy. Of course, it's going to hurt her some. A woman don't like the idea of finding out she made a fool of herself. But it'll be better for her to find it out now than later.
Well, I just don't see how this concerns the sheriff, Doc.
Man who tells a widow woman to batch lies and finagles around so as he can get control of her property, that concerns the sheriff, don't it? Fellow who do that, he might do a lot worse, Britt. He might do a whole lot worse. You just mark my word. All right, let's have a look at that hand of yours.
Oh, sure, yeah. What?
Now, don't let the redness worry you. You ain't scalded. Swelling has gone down a mite. Well, I'll just wrap it up real tight, and in a day or so, it'll be good as new. Swear I don't know how I'd get along without Epsom salts. Seems like they're a remedy for almost everything. Put old Lady Murdoch on them last year when her liver was acting up. 4 or 5 doses, and she ain't had a bit of trouble since. Why, she was even at the barn dance last Saturday carrying on like she didn't have no liver at all. Now, if you'll just hold out your hand, Brett.
After Doc Early got through with his bandaging, my hand did feel a little better. At least some of the throbbing seemed to go away. So I left his office, and I wandered over the hotel. By the time I got there, they were serving supper in the dining room. Not family style, either. They had a real fancy layout. You know, separate tables, flowers on them. 2 waitresses wearing little checkered aprons sort of matched the tablecloths. Of course, when a place is all fixed up like that, they always make it up on you. You know, Well, you can figure on paying a little extra for your food when they have a place. Now, for instance, the steak I ordered, it was going to cost 35 cents. That's what it said on the menu, 35 cents.
There, here you are, mister.
Oh, thanks.
Looks like you're going to have trouble cutting it. What's wrong with your hand?
It's nothing serious. It's just a sprain. I guess maybe I should have ordered something I could spoon through.
You want me to slice up the meat for you?
No, I'll manage. I just get this thumb out of here. I'll be all right.
Well, if you want anything, just holler.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, miss. I don't know why they give me the toughest steak in the whole kitchen. For 35 cents, you'd think you'd get a better...
Howdy, Britt.
Oh, hello, Doc. Were you eating here, too, tonight?
No, Britt, I was looking for you.
For me? What?
Cal Plummer just come riding into town, says his ma's been shot.
Been shot? Cora?
That's what Cal says. He don't think it's too serious, but I'm going out the ranch now and see what I can do for her.
Oh, of course, sure. Yeah.
Cal told me to bring you along.
Me? What for?
I don't know. He just told me to find you if I could and bring you.
He did, huh? That's funny.
Well, Britt, you coming or not?
Well, I sure don't see where I figure in this thing, but if Cal wants me, I...
Sorry to drag you away from your supper.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right, Doc. I'm afraid I was fighting a losing battle with that steak anyhow.
We'll return to James Stewart as the six-shooter in just a moment. Every day, every one of us Americans has the satisfaction of knowing that right now, we enjoy the highest standard of living in all history. And we've only begun, for it's a fact that our standard of living will rise still higher. And while we've made ourselves stronger economically, we've retained all of our basic freedoms. We work where we choose, we bargain collectively, contract our own affairs, and profit from our inventiveness and enterprise. That's the American economic system, and I'm for it. I'm sure you are, too. So let's keep things that way, friends, all of us. Now, Act Two of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
The Plummer Ranch was about half hour ride east of Petersville. Real big outfit, too. Maybe, 50 square miles of grazing land and all. The main ranch house just off the road was built to size. You know, 2 stories tall with giant big windows facing out. I remember hearing folks tell how Ned Plummer had to send all the way up to Chicago to get glass big enough for those windows. There was a couple of lamps burning somewhere on the first floor. You could see a little light spilling through the draperies. You know. The rest of the place was dark. Whoa, Scott. Whoa. Whoa, boy. And we left our horses in the yard, Doc and I. And he grabbed his satchel with the medical instruments, and we walked up to the carved mahogany door, the front door.
Just a minute. Yes? Doc Early.
Evening.
Just what can I do for you, Doctor?
Well, Cal said that Ms. Plummer... Ms. Quincy, your wife, that she was hurt somehow.
Oh, I see. Well, it's nothing serious, just a scratch. My gun went off accidentally. Bullet grazed her shoulder. But Cora's perfectly all right now. Matter of fact, I think she's already gone to bed.
Is it Oliver?
Sounds to me like she's still up.
Well, I guess I was mistaken.
Yeah.
Oliver?
It's the doctor, dear, and...
My name's Ponsett, Britt Ponsett.
Britt Ponsett?
That's right, Mr. Quincy.
Well, I suppose you might as well come in, doctor. Mr. Ponsett?
I go.
This way. I told him it was only a scratch, dear, but as long as Dr. Early rode way out here, I suppose he might as well have a look at you, just to be on the safe side.
Hello, Cora.
Britt. Why, what are you doing in Petersville? You get into town?
This afternoon. Didn't Cal tell you?
Well, no.
It must have slipped his mind.
Good evening, Cora. Let me see here.
Now, Doc, you shouldn't be troubling over me. I'm all right, really.
Well, of course you are, my dear. Of course you are. Bullet barely grazed his skin.
Yeah.
I'm afraid the good doctor doesn't approve of my bandage.
No. It's perfectly satisfactory. At least it appears to be. I'd like to take it off, though, make certain there's no danger of infection. You mind stepping in the other room, Cora?
Well,
Go ahead, my dear. Go ahead.
I'll see you before you leave, Britt.
Oh, sure. I'll wait around till the dog finishes up.
Nice of you to ride out to Dr. Early, Mr. Ponsett. I imagine he appreciates having the company.
Well, it wasn't his idea, Mr. Quincy.
Oh?
No,
Cal asked him to bring me along.
I'm afraid I don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Well, I reckon that makes us even. Whereabouts is he, anyway?
Calvin? I don't know. He hasn't been here all evening.
He wasn't around when the shooting took place.
It was not a shooting, Mr. Ponsett. It was an accident.
Well, whatever it was.
And Calvin was not here. I met up with him while I was riding into town to get the doctor, and he offered to save me the trip.
Oh, I guess I was under the impression you said Cora didn't need a doctor.
No, she doesn't. But at first, I didn't know how serious the wound might be. Then, when I got back to the house, I saw it didn't amount to anything.
Uh-huh.
And by the time you and Dr. Early showed up, I'd forgotten the whole thing. That's why I was surprised to see you. For a moment, I couldn't think what you wanted.
Your gun just happened to go off, huh?
I was going to clean it. I thought it was empty. I guess I don't know too much about firearms.
What make do you carry?
Why...
He doesn't carry any make, but I do.
I hadn't seen Cal come into the front hall, so I didn't know how long he'd been standing there. He was holding a .45, using it to cover his stepfather. The gun wasn't moving either. Cal's hand was as steady as his eyes. Steady and cold and determined. It wasn't the first time I'd seen a man with a look like that on his face. Now, not a killer's look exactly, at least not the look of somebody who wants to kill. More like somebody who hasn't got any choice.
I was wondering how you'd lie out of it, Quincy. What kind of story you'd tell. You weren't very convincing either, considering all the practice you've had.
Calvin, listen to me. I know how you feel.
You haven't got the slightest notion how I feel. If you did, you'd have left town like I told you a couple of hours ago.
Now, take it easy, Cal.
I gave him warning, Britt. I gave him fair warning. I said I'd kill him if he didn't get out and stay out for good.
I don't know what it is he's got against me, Mr. Ponsett. I suppose I don't measure up to his
father. Measure up to him? I ought to kill you for even comparing yourself. Well, are you going or not, Quincy? Because if you're not, this time Ma ain't here to get in the way.
Well, was that what happened before? Is that how she got shot up?
It was his fault. He's got her so mixed up, she doesn't see anything straight. She thinks he's fond of her the way she is of him. When she saw the gun, she ran forward, yelling and screaming. The way she grabbed my hand, that's what made it go off. I never meant to fire. Least of all, I never meant to hit Ma.
But your Ma's all right, Calvin. The bullet hardly touched her.
I don't believe... Is that true, Mr. Punch?
That's right, Cal. Car's fine. Doc Early's in there now, just making certain.
All right, Quincy. Start moving before she comes back.
Now, hold on. Hold on a minute here now. This isn't any way to settle things. He's your mother's husband. She's got a right to know what's going on.
You think I want her to know what a liar he is? That he never cared for? You think I want to break her heart?
Well, what are you talking about, Calvin? I never lied to Cora. Never in my life.
And where's that big ranch you're supposed to own and all the money you're supposed to have?
What?
Tell Mr. Ponsett about your holdings. He's been to Elk Point. And there ain't no Quincy Ranch.
Oh, you're not making any sense, Calvin.
I ain't going to stand around here arguing.
Put that away, Cal.
Not until he leaves. He gives me his word he won't be back. And if he don't keep his word...
Cal?
You don't figure in this, Mr. Ponsett.
You got me out here. It was my idea.
Well, nobody's keeping.
This bandage isn't on my gun hand, Cal.
He's got you fooled into being on his side, too.
I didn't say that.
Look, ain't there nobody that sees him for what he really is? All he's trying to do is to get his hands on what my father left. Dad worked hard. All his life he worked hard. And when he was dying, he told me to look after Ma. Told me it was my job. Well, I'm going to do my job, Mr. Ponson. And nobody's...
Calvin, you've made enough trouble for one night.
I'm sorry, Ma. Didn't want you to be here. Didn't want you to find out.
Find out what? My son's turned into a lunatic?
I'm only doing it for you, Ma.
For me? You think you're helping me by carrying on like this? I've got my own life to live, Calvin. You've got to let me live it as I see best.
Ma, he's no good... I was trying to get him to leave before Sheriff Jay comes back from Roswell, before the whole thing came out. Well, I guess it's too late now. I guess you'll have to know.
Know what?
He hasn't got a ranch. He ain't got any money.
Oh.
If you don't believe me, ask Britt Ponsett. He only married you because of what Pa left you.
No, all I said that I didn't know of any Quincy Ranch near Elk Point. That's all I said. I haven't been around there for a couple of years. Maybe by now.
Well, there ain't no such ranch now either. Is there, Quincy?
Well, no, of course not.
There but... you see, Ma.
Calvin, listen to me.
He's admitting it, Ma. Why don't you face facts? Everybody else has been on to him. Everybody but you.
It's all my fault. I should have told you in the first place. I know that Oliver isn't rich. I never thought he was.
You never thought... Ma?
Well, maybe Doc and I'd better get
rid
of it, huh?
No, I'd like you to stay, Brent. Calvin is right about one thing, though. I've been making a fool of myself. What's worse, I've been making a fool of Oliver, too.
Now, Cora...
You see, Calvin, I've known Oliver for a long time. Your father and I, well, we were all friends back in Kansas. All three of us. Of course, that was before I married your dad.
You've known each other all these years?
Once, Oliver asked me to marry him. But I chose your father. And I've never been sorry I made that choice. I guess you know that, Ollie.
Well, sure, Cora.
But after Ned died, well, it was like part of me had died, too. And I felt all... hollow and useless, lonesome. Not a very romantic way of putting it. Lonesome, but that's how I felt. Like I couldn't go on by myself. Oh, you did your best, son, to keep me from thinking about your father and about myself. But it wasn't enough. And I kept remembering what your father said when he first took sick and he knew he wasn't going to get well. He said he'd take it as a compliment if I was to marry again. That it would mean our marriage had been a good one. But more than that, I think he knew I wasn't the kind to live alone. So I wrote to Oliver, asked him to come out to Petersville just for a visit. And then... well, us getting married was my idea.
Your idea, Cora?
Ollie was afraid of what folks would think. Me having this ranch and him not worth very much. He's afraid they'd get the idea he was marrying me because of my money. So I told everybody that he had a ranch of his own, even bigger than mine.
Boy, Cora.
Oh, I was just trying to make it easier on him, Britt, so he wouldn't be embarrassed, uncomfortable. Oliver didn't know what I was up to.
You shouldn't have done it, Cora.
I'm sorry, Ollie. But I'm not sorry I married you.
Oh, my.
You've got to understand, Calvin. It's true. I'm an old lady and a foolish one. And it's true I don't feel the same way toward Oliver that I felt toward your father. You only feel that once in a lifetime. And some folks aren't even that lucky. But it's better for me not to be alone the time that's left. I think it's better for Oliver, too.
You should have told me, Ma.
Yes. Yes, I see that now. But I wasn't sure how you'd take it. Too bad you were dragged into this, Britt. You and Doc, but I wanted you to hear it all before you left.
Sure, Cora.
You knew Ned. You were a good friend of his. He thought a lot of you.
Oh, I sure hope so.
What would he think? How would he feel about my marrying again?
Oh, it's pretty hard to speak for somebody else, Cora. But Ned loved you. That was plain to everybody. So I guess he'd want you to be happy and content. That's what Ned would want.
Thanks, Britt.
Well, Doc, hey, it's about time we're getting back to town, isn't it? After that, I guess Cal and Oliver started hitting it off real well.
Anyway, the last time I was through Petersville, folks were all talking about how much Oliver Quincy had done for the Plummer Ranch. Practically doubled the size of the herd, and now he was building a house down on the south pasture for Cal to live in when he got married. As for Sheriff Jay's story about Oliver not owning any property around Elk Point, well, the people just wouldn't believe that, that's all. The sheriff just hadn't done enough checking, that's all. A man like Oliver Quincy, why, he just had to be rich. He was written all over it.
The Six Shooter is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is based on a character created by Frank Burt and is written by him. Mr. Stewart may soon be seen in the Universal International picture, The Glenn Miller Story. Others in the cast were Virginia Gregg and Gene Tatum, Robert Griffin, Parley Bear, and Burt Holland. Special music for this program was by Basil Adlam. And the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. This is Hal Gibney. Tonight, hear Margaret O'Brien in the NBC Star Playhouse on the NBC Radio Network.
The Six Shooter on Tuned to Yesterday from December 27, 1953 on NBC. And that brings to a close this hour of Westerns on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. Thanks for tuning in.